I have a firm belief that whatever happens in our society, whatever the topic of conversation is, God has something to say about this. I don't believe God is like the sitting up there like, oh snap, I don't know what to do. They're talking about this. I didn't write, kind of figure this out. I believe God has something to say about this. And so I sat down and I think, I'm saying, God, if you could say something to us this election, if you could come down in person and say, this is what I want you to know as a church, what would it be? I started thinking about that and then started doing some research and putting down some notes. And I want you to hear what the Lord has laid in my heart, because November 8th, we make a very important decision. We make a very important decision. And so, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm fascinated by politics. I love politics. And it's funny because I keep saying all the time that I don't like psychology. So if you guys are psychology majors, I apologize. My son knows. But the psychology of what's happening is really fascinating to me. I love having conversations and speaking with people and asking questions to see what's on the mind of people. I love having a sensible dialogue on it. And as I mentioned before, I love asking probing questions. And I bet you that there's some of you in here this morning who are exactly like that. You like having political arguments. You're political junkies. And I can say I bet you, because I know I'd win, because I know at least four people who are that way and that are political junkies. They suck up everything on TV. They suck up everything in social media on it. And they get caught up in this new thing. And, you know, they look to hear, oh, let's see, what else Donald Trump is going to say today? And they're listening, you know, and then there are others like, ooh, let me listen to see what WikiLeaks is going to say about Hillary today. And the fact is, we get caught up in this, and oftentimes that we lose sight of what this is all about. We lose sight of what we're about, which is, we're about people. And this is about people. And we should never forget that behind every issue, behind every conversation, behind everything, we should never forget that what's behind it is the thing that God cares about the most. And the thing that God cares about the most is people. Andy Stanley says it like this. He says, we should never forget that what's best for people is what's best. That what's best for people is what's best. You should never forget that. And we know that this is what God cares about because he tells us all over in Scripture. We know this because the most famous verse in the Bible is about people. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son. And over and over and over again in the Bible, we have the stories about that. And, you know, one day, Jesus was having a conversation. Actually, there was a crowd of people following him. And so he looked out and he saw this crowd of people. And he's like, all right, you know, they're all this crowd here. Let me tell them something. So Jesus goes up a little bit and he has this conversation. But before that, there was a group of religious leaders who came to him. And they said to him, they said, hey Jesus, I got a question for you. What is the most important commandment? You've heard me say this before and over and over again, because the key pillar of our faith is this conversation that Jesus had with some religious leaders. He says, what is the most important argument? And Jesus says, well, the first thing is you got to love God with all your heart and all your soul and all your might and all your strength. And he's like, and before he could finish that, he says, and likewise, or equally as important, or whatever, is love your neighbor as yourself. God says, you know, it's most important to love God and love others. And all 10 commandments, all 1,615 laws in the Old Testament, every single thing that every prophet has ever said, every single thing that every apostle has said, every single thing rests upon these two things. Love God and love others. So in order to love God, key thing of loving God is putting your total faith and trust in God, because we know that without faith, it's impossible to please God. So a key thing of loving God and pleasing God is to have faith. And a key thing for loving others is we should develop a passion for doing what's best for people. So faith in God is loving God, doing for people. A passion for people is what's best for people. And that's what's meant when we say love others. Now, Jesus had one of his closest friends. He was a disciple named John. And I love John because John is, well, he's a love disciple. He talks about love all the time. And John's an interesting guy. Again, it's like Jesus' closest friend. Jesus had, like, you know, all these people who followed him. Then he had 70 guys that he sent out. Then he had a circle of 12. And then when that circle of 12, he had three, Peter, James, and John. And then of the three, he had this one guy, John, that really felt that he was special. And John, even when he was writing it, he says, you know what? This is the disciple that Jesus loved. I don't know. You got to be some kind of arrogant to say that, you know, this, you know, by the way, you guys know this is the disciple that Jesus loved. You know, by the way, Jesus loves me. And so John wrote this. In 1 John 4, he said this here. Let's see. He said, dear friends, let us unselfishly love and seek the best for one another. He said, in order to love unselfishly, we need to seek what's best for the other person. For love is from God, and everyone who loves others is born of God and knows God. It's really through a personal experience. It's from the Expanded Bible. And then he goes on to say, for whoever does not love others does not know God, because God is love. God is the author of love. If you don't love others and don't have a passion for others, then you don't love God. So we need to unselfishly do what's best and love and seek what's best for the other person. So here's a question this morning that's on the table. What would God say to us this election? I can answer that question right now. He says, I want you to put your passion for people above your passion for politics. That's the answer to the question this morning. And we could actually pack up and go home right now, because we've answered the question. What would God say to us this election this morning is to put passion for people above your passion for politics. Said differently, you should let your passion for people drive your political passion. I want to say that one more time because I want you to get that. Your passion for people should drive your political passion. And you know, and I know this, right, because I say it too. Everybody would say, so Gary, I got this because that's what I do. My viewpoint on everything that I have with respect to politics comes from because I love people, and this is all about people. And so I'm good. And no matter what side of the political spectrum you're on, you're like, you know, I'm even better than that. I put God first. And then I put people. I got that what Jesus said down, love God, love others, and that what drives my politics. I'm good. And the Democrats will say, I'm good. And Republicans will say, I'm good. But yet still, we have this polarizing divide between us. You know, and if you're a Republican, you will say, you know, you say, everybody knows that Jesus would have been a Republican. You see, everybody knows that. And how we know that is because Republicans put God first and people first. So we know that. And if you're really spiritual, if you're a really spiritual Republican, you could even quote this verse. You could say, you know, a wise man's heart, the wisest man who ever lived, Solomon said this, a wise man's heart inclines him to the right, but a fool's heart inclines him to the left. So, if I'm a Republican, I'm wise. If I'm a Democrat, I'm a fool. And he goes on and says, well, we know this because because, you know, Republicans stand for abortion rights and family values. And I mean, evil. The same man who wrote this, the wisest man who ever lived, says, hey, if you don't take care of your family, you're worse than an infidel. And if you don't work, you can't eat. So God is definitely a Republican because he talked a lot about personal accountability and responsibility. And that's what we Republicans stand for. We stand for Jesus. We stand for God. We stand for wisdom. And we stand to the right because a wise man inclines himself to the right. But I don't want to call you guys foolish, but I can only quote the scripture. And Democrats would say, wait a minute, we know that Jesus would have been a Democrat. We know this because in Luke 15, 31 to 32, Jesus gave out free health care to everybody. He was a healthcare dispensing machine. Everybody who came around got free healthcare. And we know that Jesus would be a Democrat because he gives free healthcare. Not only that, Jesus believed that everybody should share. He took away food from this boy who had 5 loaves and 2 fish and he redistributed to everybody else. So we know that Jesus believed in sharing. What one person who has more, share a little bit more around the place. Jesus would have been a Democrat. He talked about taking poor and the needy. And you know what? Jesus believed in free education. He taught people for free. That's all he did. He spent most of his time teaching people for free. So Jesus believed in free healthcare. And giving out, sharing, you know, taking some money from the rich and giving the person who had more and giving it to the poor. And he believed in free education. And Jesus also believed in paying taxes. He believed that we should render unto Caesar what belongs to Caesar. So Jesus is definitely a Democrat. And what's interesting, you know, it's kind of humorous. By the way, I had to search for these. But while it's humorous, it's really not, because we can find a verse in the Bible to justify any position that we have on anything. We'll pick a verse out and we'll use it to justify. And so Republicans will say one thing, Democrats will say one, Libertarians will say, Independents will say another thing. And then we're left again with, well, what would Jesus really say to us this election? Because everybody believes they're putting God and people above their politics. You know what I think? I believe in order to get over that, we need to not just look at what Jesus said, or the Bible says, we need to look at what Jesus did. We need to look at Jesus' lives. And I challenge you this morning, if you're struggling with this, is to read the gospel. Start out with the gospel of John, but you can read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and see what Jesus did. And see, you know, and follow what Jesus did. Right? Because at the end of the day, we got to put our passion for people above our passion for politics. And we can never forget what's best for people is what's best. So, I know what you're saying, because I would be saying this too, right? If I was there, that's what I'm doing. Every time I post something on social media, that's what I'm doing. Every time I have an argument with somebody, that's what I'm doing, because I'm passionate about people. I'm passionate about Black Lives Matter. I'm passionate about Blue Lives Matter. I'm passionate about All Lives Matter. I'm passionate about incarceration of black men. I'm passionate about immigration and protecting the rights of the unborn. I'm passionate about protecting our borders and about safety for our country. And I can go on and on and on about all the things that you guys and I am passionate about. But we're still faced with the dilemma. Okay, God, we know it's supposed to be about people, But I still have this problem when these things don't intersect. So in order to help you answer that question today and make it real to you, I'm going to ask you two questions. I'm going to pose two questions to you this morning. Number one is this. Is your passion for politics impacting your ability to influence people? Is your passion for politics impacting your ability to influence people? I don't know about you, but if you find yourself getting all worked up and amped up every time you hear an issue, and you get amped up about, you know, like you get like angry when somebody says something that disagrees with you. In that anger, are you losing your ability to have an influence for the kingdom over that person? Is your passion for politics greater and impacting your ability to influence people? When people hold a different political view than you, what do you do with that? Do you block them on Twitter? Do you unfriend them? What do you do with that? I don't know what you do on Snapchat, because I tell you before, I'm not allowed on Snapchat. Do you find that you won't listen to certain news stations because those guys got it wrong, but the stations I listen to have got it right? Do you find that everybody else is biased wrong and you're right? You see, I believe that if most of us were honest with ourselves, we would see that in many of us, we're losing our ability to impact and influence people around us because of our passion for politics. We're putting that higher and higher. And I keep telling you that there's a world of people who are lost, and we are losing our ability to influence them because our passion for politics supersedes our passion for people in our actions. I faced this dilemma some time ago, recently, during this election cycle. There's a friend of mine who's a Christian, and we were having a conversation one day, and he took the conversation home to his wife, and he came back to me the following day, or a couple days later. He says, "Gary, my wife and I were talking, and we're struggling with something." "Because you're a pastor, right?" I'm like, "Yeah." They said, "You told me that you voted for Obama at least one of the times," because I don't like telling people what I vote for. By the way, I voted Republican too, so, you know, I vote candidate. So, but they told me, "You told me you voted for Obama. We're struggling with how can you, as a pastor and a Christian, vote for Obama? Because after all, he's a Muslim and he wasn't even born in this country." I tell you, a lot of emotions went off inside of me. Because I wanted to say, "Are you intelligent?" I wanted to say, "Are you an idiot?" But I had to think, I'm like, okay, what am I going to do with this conversation? Because my first response, my knee-jerk response, if I didn't check it, would have not been a response that would give me an ability to impact and influence that person in the future. You know, Jesus was immensely concerned with our ability to influence people. This is really just, he was immensely concerned, not just a little bit. And so, you know, one day Jesus was giving out one of his free education sessions. This crowd has fallen in, and he, you know, this crowd of like a ton of people. And he's like, "All right, I gotta dispense some knowledge to these people." So he got up on it's like it was a mountain, but he got up a little bit so he's higher than them so he could speak. They could hear, they could see him. It's called the Sermon on the Mount. And Jesus started talking, and he says, and he, Jesus knew there was a mixed crowd. There were followers of him, and there were people who didn't follow him. And he just said, okay, I want to talk to my followers for a second. And he wanted everybody to hear what he was about to say. Because Jesus is like, look, you need to expect these people to be like this. And Jesus said this, you, my followers, are salt of the earth. But if you lose your saltiness, how can you be made salty again? You're no longer good for anything. He's like, look, you don't get a second chance to get back your saltiness. You don't get a second chance to restore your influence. You need to realize that you are salt. You are salt. You need to recognize that. And whatever happens, every time something comes up, an argument comes up, something comes up, and you want to respond, you're like, I'm salt. I'm salt. And that's what God wants us to do. He wants our passions to maintain our saltiness. And it doesn't mean watering down a message. It doesn't mean not having an opinion. It means you got to maintain your saltiness, because if you lose it, this is profound, you lose it. You're no longer good for anything with respect to that person. You might as well be thrown out and trampled underfoot. That's heavy, that's harsh. Jesus is like, man, don't ever forget this. Is your passion for people impacting your ability to, your passion for politics impacting your ability to influence people? Question number one. Question number two is this. Is your passion for arguing greater than your passion for doing? Is your passion for arguing greater than your passion for doing? You know, in that same session, that same free education session Jesus was doing, Jesus said, all right, I want to tell you something else about this, right? He said, I want you to know something. You're not only salt. He says, you are the light of the world. You are the light of the world. A town that is built on a hill cannot be hidden. I don't know if you guys, in South Florida, we don't have this, but if you ever go to any place where you see, right, that have mountains, if there's one house sitting on the side of the hill, and it has any light on inside of the house, it can't be hidden. Everybody is seeing it. Everybody is seeing it. And he goes on to say this. He says, you need to let your light shine before others. Your light has to shine before others that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. The verse in between that really says, do you want to take your light and put it under a bushel? Do you want to hide your light? It's like, no, because we are the light of the world. We have a responsibility to bring light into this world, and we should not be hidden. So therefore, our light should shine before others, so that may see our good works and glorify our Father in heaven. Are people seeing your good works? Or are they seeing your arguments and your talks? Are they seeing your arguments and they say, so what are you doing about it? What are you doing about it? You have a passion for the unborn. What are you doing about it? You have a passion for Black Lives Matter. What are you doing about it? You have a passion for immigration. You have a passion for unwed. What are you doing about it? Besides arguing and saying, this ain't right, and whatever you say, is your passion for arguing greater than your passion for doing. See, talk is cheap. Talk is free. I love my brother. He always tells me, you know why a mouth is made that way? A mouth is made to say anything. You heard me say this before. You could say, I love you. I love you. You are the only one for me. You know, got it kind of like that. But if your actions don't back it up, it doesn't mean squat. Is your passion for arguing greater than your passion for doing? You know, if I was sitting down with you here in this message, I'd be like, it's like, Gary, I'm only one person. What can I do? What can I do? Because the problems that we have as society is so great. What can I do? And you know the funny thing about this? I said, I'm glad you asked that question, because I got an answer for you. We have three extremely powerful tools at our disposal. And I'm going to go over them in a second, but each one increases in power over the next one. And they're extremely powerful tools, and I often find that we don't utilize these tools that each one of us as an individual possess and contain. So I'm going to give you all of them right now. The first one is, let's see, you have the ability to vote. You have the ability to vote, you have the ability to pray, and you have the ability to love. The three, they're four-letter words, but they're good four-letter words. Three powerful tools each one of us have at our disposal. So let me start out with the first one. We have the ability to vote. You know, so voting is not specifically mentioned in the Bible. If anybody tell you that voting is in the Bible, it actually isn't. But what is in the Bible is selecting and appointing leaders. Selecting and appointing leaders, it's kind of like a republic. I went through school here, and I didn't know what a republic really meant until fairly recently. So it's selecting and appointing leaders. And the Bible has a lot to say about selecting and appointing leaders. And so God discusses, and he has some instructions for doing that. And you know, in the past, the people didn't have, the masses didn't have the opportunity to participate, to have a voice in the process. But now we have the ability to have a voice in the process. Before, the people, leaders, appointed leaders. But now we have the ability to appoint leaders who sometimes appoint other leaders like Supreme Court nominees. But we have the ability to do that. So the instructions given to the leaders who appoint other leaders, because we're like leaders now because we get that same ability to appoint other leaders. So here's what God says. You know, he says this, and it's an example. In Exodus 18:21, Moses' father-in-law was giving him some instructions on like, look, you can't do this alone. You need to appoint some leaders. And he says, Moses, here's what you need to do, man. You shall select able men, I put in brackets, or women, who fear God, who are men or women of truth, who hate covetousness, and you need to place them as rulers over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. Folks, if you want to know how to start voting, start with verses like these, and there are a number of them in the Bible that give you instructions on how you should select leaders. You look for able men or women. First, they got to have the ability. And then you want to look for some characteristics of them. They have a fear of God. They tell the truth. They hate covetousness. And I know what you guys are thinking. That means I shouldn't vote. Yeah, we got none of those. Or if you're diehard, you say, no, my guy tells the truth. that girl doesn't, or my girl tells the truth and that guy doesn't. But the reality is that wherever you stand in this, that's the beginning of some criteria to choose, to vote. And, you know, so if you're truthful, though, if you're honest with yourself, you'll say, well, these candidates, and by the way, every one of us is flawed, so I'm not disparaging any candidate, but these candidates are flawed. They don't match up. So here are some further guidelines around voting that you should do. Number one, make a list. Vote. So number one is vote your passions. Vote your passions. You know, God, I just love God. He gave each and every one of us some passions for some things. Right? He gave some people a passion for the unborn. He gave people a passion for adoption. He gave people passions for the issues of immigration or of education. He gave every one of us passions, some things you're really passionate about. So here's my advice to you. List your passions because God gave them to you. He didn't give it to you for you to hide it under a bushel. It's like a light on a hill. He gave them to you. So write them down and say, you know what? Man, I'm really passionate about this. And you write down the list of all the things that you're passionate about. Right? And then you look at each candidate and you say, where does this candidate line up against my passions? And by the way, talk is cheap. You have to look at the history. Next year, I'm going to do a series, The Singles. But one of the things, you get a preview here. One of the things you get from that is, do not believe any girl or any guy who tells you, man, you know, last week I was like this, but today I've cleaned up my act. And you're it, baby. It's all about you. I know I used to be promiscuous, but right now, it's just you and me alone. You got to see actions. The past is the best indicator of the future. You need to see what people have done in the past about the issues that you are worked up about. Not what they're saying on the stump. You're like, I got 30, 50, 70 years of history. Over the last 70 years, what have I done? Not what I'm doing today, but what have I done? And that's the best indicator of the future. So see how they line up. Because do not discount the passions that God gave you. And by the way, God gave, I'm going to spend a little bit of time on this. God gave each one of us separate passions. Don't expect me to have your passion. Don't get mad at me when I don't have your passion. I'm like, that's all right, that's cool. But don't like, no, you got to be worked up about this. No, you're not worked up about what I'm worked up about. Unless you're willing to get worked up about what I'm worked up about, you can't tell me to get worked up about, well, you can. But don't lose your influence in that process. Have the dialogue. But recognize God is the author of diversity, and he made each and every one of us different for a purpose. So it works out kind of like this. I have a passion for this. Somebody else has a passion for this. Somebody else has a passion for this. I'm making a diamond, a baseball diamond. And somebody else has a passion for this. And I'm pulling people this way, and somebody's pulling this way. And you pull by your vote, right? You're pulling people this way, and you know what happens? You end up with something that is good for the country. The political system works when we vote for our passions. And everybody has a voice in the process doing that, but that's only part of it. So in order to vote, and vote your passions, but here's an even more important thing, is to vote Jesus' passions. See, Jesus had some passions. When he was here on this earth, it's clear what Jesus' passions were. And I'm not going to tell you what they are lest you think I'm trying to steer you some way, but I do encourage you to go and read the Gospels. Start with John and read. And before you read, say, God, please reveal to me what your passions are. And see what Jesus' passions are and then you take your passions, you take Jesus' passions, you put them all together, and you exercise your right to select and appoint able men or women. It's not about the best candidate, it's about the better candidate. It's not about no candidates are good, but sometimes you just want to keep out the worst candidate. I know what I'm saying. I'm probably going to get some emails this week. It's all right, because I advertised today. I said, it's a conversation. You want a conversation? We have a conversation afterwards. Vote your passions. Vote Jesus's passions. It's my advice to you. And you know, and we miss a tremendous opportunity when we vote, when we don't vote. Our vote shapes the national conversations in this country. Our votes shape the agenda, not only for one generation, but for many generations to come. And by the way, very important, gotta hear this. Everybody votes. Everybody votes. If you are a citizen of this country and you think you're not voting, you are, because a non-vote is a vote with the majority. You've in essence taken your proxy, your vote, and says, I'm handing it to the majority. That's what you're doing. So you think, well, I'm not going to vote because I don't like any of these candidates. You are voting. You're giving your proxy. You're giving your vote to the majority. So make sure you know who you're giving your proxy to. And you just might as well just vote for that person if you want to do that, right? It's an interesting statistic. 20% of evangelical Christians aren't registered to vote. And then of those who are registered to vote, 20% doesn't vote. Or 20% of evangelical Christians doesn't. So 40% of the Christian community doesn't vote. And you think, I'm just one person, my vote doesn't matter. I take you back to 2000 elections. Al Gore, George Bush, 300 votes. Decided 8 years of politics. 300 votes. Your vote counts. Here are some instructions how to help you choose, select able men. Because, like it or not, one or two of these candidates will be selected unless God intervenes. By the way, you can pray for that too. The second thing at our disposal, the increasing order of importance, is prayer. We have this four-letter word that sounds kind of like cliche to people, oh, just pray about it. Man, we got a big old bazooka, Uzi, in that four-letter word that even trumps. Sorry, wrong choice of word. You guys didn't get that. It really wasn't intentional. So we have a four-letter word that beats. Trumps is a good word. Voting. As important as voting is, prayer is even more important than that. And we don't really use it. And you know, here's what Paul says in the Bible. He says this. He's like, he was writing a letter to Timothy. Timothy was a young pastor. And Paul's like telling, hey, Timothy, here's what I want you to tell your church. Here's what I want you to tell your people. He's like, I want you to urge them that supplications, which literally means to pray or asking for something, that your prayers of intercessions, which means that I'm standing in the gap for somebody. I'm like, Lord, I'm coming on behalf of somebody. And thanksgivings be made for all people. But I want to talk about it for kings and all who are in high positions. I want you to urge everybody that you need to pray and intercede and beg and thank God for kings and for people in high places, in high positions. And he goes on to say this, that, right? He's telling you before what you should do, and now he's telling you that, we may lead a peaceful life. That we may lead a quiet life. That we may live a godly life and a dignified life in every way. And by the way, this is good. It's a good thing that you pray for them, because that a peaceful and quiet life is good, and it is pleasing to God. He's like giving instructions, like, you need to pray for your leaders. You need to pray for your leaders. And here is the cool thing. I get this all the time, right? People ask me, well, why am I going to pray? Because God's predestined how it's going to turn out anyway, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I did a series on this last year called Will I Am. Encourage you to go listen to it. It's like a six or seven week series on this. But I want to tell you this. There's a difference between God's will and God's plan. God's plan will be accomplished. It's like, he didn't say God's plan on earth be done as it in heaven. No, God's plan will be accomplished. God is working out a plan. He has sometimes specific plans for our life, and sometimes, like, you know, I don't think God really cared whether I wore a gray shirt or a blue shirt this morning. Right? But God has some specific plans, like he told Jeremiah, I know the plans I have for you. Right? But God's plans are the what will happen. God's will is his desire for us. So God's plan is what? God's plan will always be accomplished. But God's will may not be accomplished. And that's why the Lord's Prayer says, your will be done. It's a prayer for your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. God has some desires for us. And so God's plan is the what, and his will is the how. So you can either have a miserable life while God is unfolding his plan, or you can have a good life while God is unfolding his plan. And so when you pray, you're praying for God's will to be done, so that your life will be good and peaceful and godly and dignified as he's unfolding his plan. God's plan will be accomplished regardless of whether Donald Trump goes in or whether Hillary Clinton goes in. If you think God is up there sitting around worried, like, oh my God, I hope the people don't vote for Trump, or I don't hope they don't vote for Hillary, you're sadly mistaken. God's like, y'all can vote whoever you want to vote for. My plan will be accomplished. Who you vote for determines how you live while I'm accomplishing my plan. I want you to get that, because that's a really, really, really key thing. You know, some of us, and by the way, prayer is the way to accomplish, to get God's will to be done. Right? And so some of us are walking around a place like, oh man, I don't know if I vote wrong. If I vote wrong, you know, then the wrong person is going to come in and they're going to select Supreme Court justices. That's not going to line up, and they're going to overturn Roe v. Wade. And oh no, I need justices that's going to, going to keep Roe v. And you're going on and you're going on. I need justices who stand for this. I need justices who stand for that. And you guys think that God is up there worried, like, I hope they get this right. God's like, I've given them some standards by how they should select their leaders. And all throughout the Old Testament, New Testament, God, no matter what calamity has happened, God's like, you know what? All things does work together. All things do work together for good. You know what? I got a plan, and I'm going to unfold this plan. And God is not up there sitting now worried about whether Hillary gets in power or Donald Trump gets in power. That's my opinion, because his plan. But he's worried for us. And he's like, guys, choose. Choose right. And so, here's something else that we do know. The same Solomon, God is like, look, you guys need to know how powerful prayer is because of this. He says, the heart of a king is like rivers of water in the hand of the Lord. He turns it wherever he wishes. You put the wrong guy in there or the wrong lady in there, and we start praying as individuals and we start praying as a church, the Lord's like, I'll just turn his mind around. I'll turn her mind around. And you worried about Supreme Court justice? Your prayer trumps any Supreme Court justice that Trump or Hillary will put in. Your prayer overrides your vote. But too many times, we don't exercise that four-letter word, prayer. And we don't do it daily and without season. And we have a mess in our country. We have a powerful, powerful weapon in prayer. But here's another one. Because remember, everything rests upon this word. The third tool we have is love. I didn't say it. Jesus himself said it. The entire law, everything that's ever been said, rests upon this blue word. This four-letter word. Love. And, you know, John, because he's the love disciple, because he's a disciple that Jesus loved, he wrote about love. He said this. If anyone says, I love God, and some version says hate, the literal translation is work against his brother, he's a liar. He's a liar. If you say you have love and you work against your brother, you're a liar. So the converse of that is, if you love your brother, you will do things to work with them. Right? Because if you work against them, you're a liar. You don't love God. So working with them is really what God requires us to do. So working with, and even if they have different political views than you, even if they have the most idiotic views in your mind, you got to work together. And the next time you find yourself getting all worked up and angry at somebody who holds a particular opinion about a political candidate or a particular party, whatever. And I heard this from somebody. I thought it was good, so I'll share it to you. Ask two questions. So you're getting like, we need to do this, we need to do this, we need to do this. Just say, instead of getting answers, I'd say something like, that's interesting. So you can tell you what led to this view. How did you come up with this view? Instead of retorting, ask a question. What led to this view? An interesting thing that happens, one, sometimes they can't even answer what led them to this view. Like, I saw something on Fox News, or I saw something on MSNBC. Like, what led you to this view? And in them verbalizing it, sometimes they realize themselves that it's a ridiculous view. Or you learn something. You get behind what they're thinking. You increase your ability to influence. And then when you do that, you may find that you have some common ground that you can work with your brother instead of working against. So the first question is like, that's interesting. Have you always felt this way? And the second question is, have you always felt this way? Right? So the first question is, can you tell me what led you to this position? And have you always felt this way? And in doing so, you break down the walls that divide and you start to build a common base that we can work together. Stephen Covey wrote a book called 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I encourage you to read that book. It's a great book. One of the habits is seek first to understand before seeking to be understood. We need to seek first to understand. It's like, let me understand what you're saying. Let me see where you're coming from. And then we open up a portal for them to listen to understand what we're saying. And by doing that, it is amazing how a few questions and a genuine desire to understand can change the trajectory of a relationship. So there we have it. What would God say to us this election? He would say, put your passion for people above your passion for politics. I believe he would say, vote, pray, but the greatest of these is love. And invite the praise team as we pray.